Dan'l, a jumping frog, mind?
Sitting watching them at a distant table, he's Morpheus.
Hello, Jane.
Delirium. I expected you long since.
Delirium sits beside her older brother. She's wearing a man's cut-off jacket, and her variously coloured hair, shaved at the sides, stands up. Her eyes are large. One is green, the other blue.
This is a weird little town, brother. I mean, everywhere's strange, but I feel at home here. Kind of.
Really?
Delirium holds out a hand, palm upwards. It is empty. As she speaks, a shape begins to appear above it.
You know where I spent today? Well, all these little Chinese girls who come over here. You know, two bits a trick. So by the time they're 20, they're old women. Too diseased to live.
Over Delirium's hand floats a little translucent heart, dripping translucent blood. She gazes into nowhere with her mismatched, unfocused eyes.
Well, they lock them away in these places where they starve to death or they maybe kill themselves. I spent a day with some of them. They're nice. What was I saying? Do you like September? I like September. Ugh.
She slumps onto the table. The heart fades away.
You are here about Norton, I take it, under the terms of the challenge.
Challenge? Oh, yeah, she said something about that. I don't know.
Clemens is telling his story, making a salt shaker jump as if it's a frog.
Can outjump anything!
pray continue.
Well, then he says, 1, 2, 3, jump! And him and the feller touched up the frogs from behind, and the new frog hopped off.
Well, Mr. Norton ought to be mine, but he isn't, is he?
No.
He's so sane. Except about being emperor, of course. And I'm not even sure about that. Are you pleased to see me? Maybe you are. I like to see you, but you're kind of scary.
Perhaps.
Huh?
Perhaps I am pleased to see you, sister.
Oh.
Why, blame my cat if he don't weigh 5 pound.
And turned him upside down and he belched out a double handful of shot. And then he see how it was. And he was the maddest man. He set the frog down and took out after that feller. But he never catched him.
Samuel, why don't you write down the story of the frog?
The frog?
People would like to read about the frog. People like things that make them laugh. People laugh at me, you know, Sam.
Don't you mind that, Your Majesty?
Oh, why should I mind, Sam? But let them laugh. I'm still their emperor.
Indeed you are.
I don't like it. I don't like it when people laugh at me.
I like you, Sam. You're a good man. I'm going to do something for you. It's Twain you write under, isn't it?
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Yes. I, Norton the First.
While Norton scribbles in his notebook and Sam drinks the last of his whiskey, Delirium, bored with the action, conjures up a little frog with wings. It floats above her hand, like the heart did.
Of Mark Twain is made by royal appointment official spinner of tales and teller of stories to these United States of America for the duration of his mortal lifetime. Signed, Norton the First, Emperor. Good. There you go, Sam.
For the duration of my mortal lifetime, huh? That's pretty big of you, Your Majesty.
Well, I must promenade once more to show myself to the multitudes. Duty calls. Oh, Sam, thank you for the meal. I appreciate it.
He's not mine, is he? His madness keeps him sane.
And do you think he is the only one, my sister?
September 1875. 11 years have passed. Norton is now in his late 50s. He's filled out, eating regularly, having hit on a way to make money without doing anything that would compromise his royal status. He looks happier, too, more contented. He wears his best uniform and a beaver top hat with an ostrich feather on the front. He carries a stick with a serpent carved around it. It could almost be a caduceus in some way, a healing stick. Perhaps he is healing San Francisco, or perhaps he is healing America after the ravages of the Civil War. Over his head, he carries a huge green Chinese parasol. He stands in the park, enjoying the late afternoon.
Hey, mister, would you be the Emperor Norton?
Indeed I am.
Yeah? You know, I was reading about you in our local paper. We're on vacation. We're from Kansas, my wife and I. This is the wife.
Hi.
And this is my daughter, Lizzie. And you were something we thought we ought to keep our eyes peeled for when we was in Frisco.
San Francisco, not Frisco. This is the town of St. Francis.
Sure. Well, do you still do that money thing? I read about that.
These days, Emperor Norton carries books of printed Norton money.
Certainly. That will be 50 cents.
Woo-wee! Wait till I show everybody back home the souvenir. This will be one to tell your grandchildren, Lizzie. You saw the one and only Emperor of the United States.
Your august wisdom, your imperial magnificence, son of heaven.
A man approaches through the gathering sea fog. He's dressed in the Chinese style of this time, silk cap, silk robe, with a tarred pigtail down his back, a long moustache and a short, wispy beard.
I greet you, I who am not worthy to stand in your shadow.
Good day, Ahao. How goes it amongst my Chinese subjects?
Alas, it goes badly, Lord. Tang wars continue between Quang Dox and Sui Sing.
No. The Quang Dox have not yet made reparations, I take it.
No, Lord. But in time, they must bend, as the bamboo bends, or they will break like dry twigs.
Hey, Johnny Chinese! You know any good opium joints? Anywhere I can go to dream that special dream?
I'm not here to help you lose your soul. Go away, fool!
Yeah? Well, screw you, Johnny Chinese! Who needs you anyway?
Your Highness, I bring a message for you. Your presence is requested.
Is this a message from my Chinese subjects, Ahao? Am I needed in Chinatown?
I regret not, Lord. Your presence is required at the Cobweb Palace.
The Cobweb Palace? Ah, I see. Well, let us away.
The Cobweb Palace, a saloon and restaurant at Meigs Wharf, on the old waterfront of San Francisco, is owned and run by Abe Warner. He is almost 60, and he'll be managing this strange and ramshackle watering hole for another 20 years or more. Warner's business runs as much on barter as hard cash. He trades drinks for curiosities and exotic pets. Monkeys, parrots, and other creatures peer from their cages around the saloon.
Enough of your nonsense, Grizzle.
Warner refuses to kill spiders, which means that the interior of the saloon is a mass of cobwebs. They hang in festoons from the walls and ceiling, covering the lighting fixtures, walrus tusks, sperm whale teeth, paintings of unclad women, and even the row of bottles behind the bar. Warner himself is dressed in a faded suit, expensive and classy under the dust. The whole place is a cobwebbed, dimly lit treasure trove of strange and arcane things.
What the devil is it, then?
Grandfather, I hear men coming.
Let them enter, Grizzle. They're the first of our guests tonight. Your Majesty. Ah, how. Well, gentlemen, what'll it be?
Whatever you want, on the house.
Nothing for me, please, Mr. Warner.
Good evening, Abraham. I will have a glass of white wine, please. A light hock, if you have such a thing.
Will you take a seat at this table, Your Majesty?
Indeed I shall, Ahau.
That's right. Take a royal load off.
Grandfather! I hear a ghost riding towards us. He's coming here.
Oh, calm yourself, Grizzle. I know he's coming. He's the last of our guests. He will not harm us. Not us. Not here.
Greetings, good fellows. It is I, the monarch of monkshood, the wizard of Wolfsbane, the Earl of Aconite, the late, the great, the King of Pain.
There is nothing about the King of Pain that looks dead, though tendrils and wisps of fog swirl about him as he enters. Dressed all in scarlet, scarlet suit, cloak, and top hat, he is clean-shaven with red hair. His features reveal a mix of Caucasian, African, and Native American blood. A sword hangs at his side.
Remember me?
The King of Pain, the Aconite liniment salesman. I know you. But I heard that you had killed yourself over gambling debts. I am pleased to see that you are healthy.
Healthy? I'm dead, Norton. You ever swallowed aconite? You don't get up and walk away again.
But then...
No questions, Joshua. You don't mind if I call you Joshua? One king to another, after all. My principal sent me here with an offer for you.
Your principal?
My principal heard about your problem, Joshua.
Oh, I have no problems, Payne.
No problems? New problems, Joshua, buddy, Bobby. You don't have an empress. You may be Norton 1, but where are Norton's 2 to 16 going to come from? The stork isn't going to bring them.
I must admit that the subject has not escaped my notice. I have proposed matrimony to a number of eligible ladies, but alas, I fear they are all intimidated by my rank, and to date they have all refused me.
Yeah, well, no surprises there. So, let's see what the cards say. Okay, Josh, this is the score. I can offer you a few potential empresses. Take your pick. Oh, before I turn the cards over, you want to see them with their clothes on or off?
Sir!
Okay, okay. Don't get yourself all riled up. Here's the choice. 5 potential queens. All top drawer, genuine, sweet as pie aristocrats. You choose.
Those are 5 very attractive women. And I do see a tiara or two, so they could prove eligible as a consort.
Oh, but that's not all I'm offering.
A palace of marble with pillars.
You can't take your new empress back to your little commercial street walk-up, can you? You give the word, Joshua. Building starts tomorrow. Nice house, huh?
I don't understand, sir. Are you expecting me to do some kind of a deal with you?
Oh, no, 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 no. Well, only a little one. Look at her. Isn't she beautiful? She could be yours, Joshua. All yours. All you have to do is want her. All you have to do is want.
King of Pain, if that is who you truly are. For I am a rational man and do not believe in ghosts. I am the Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico. It is true that my rent is but 50 cents a week. It is true that my clothes were a gift from the city council. I exchange federal currency for my own, and thus I live. Many restaurants and eating houses now accept my scrip. This is my city, in my country. They treat me well here. I want nothing.
But you could be a real emperor, goddammit. You can have anything you want.
loyal friend.
Your Majesty?
You were with me when they arrested me for lunacy, Ahau, and when they released me. Do you remember what the judge told the young patrolman?
I am your chamberlain, Highness. I forget nothing. He said, Mr. Norton has shed no blood, robbed no one, and despoiled no country, which is more than can be said for most fellows in the King line.
I am the Emperor of the United States, Payne. I am content to be what I am. What more than that could any man desire?
Warm flesh writhing beneath your own young, scented, moist female flesh. Power, money, don't you want anything?
Sir, this conversation is unfitting and is at an end. Abraham, please show the King of Pain the door.
With pleasure, Your Majesty. Out you go, laughing boy.
Well, good night, gents. You can keep the pretty pictures.
Ahau, what happened here this evening?
The Emperor was offered a choice. The Emperor said no. That is the Emperor's prerogative.
Abraham, another glass of wine, if you please.
Coming right up.
This is a grim season. I need something to warm me inside and protect me from the darkness and the fog.
The King of Pain, smiling no longer, walks away from the Cobweb Palace. From out of the fog, a black coach, pulled by six white horses, pulls up beside him. Desire of the Endless, dressed in a business suit with a feather boa, looks down from inside the coach. Desire looks unimpressed.
So, you've failed.
Yeah. Sorry, Desire.
Desire turns to the person sitting opposite them in the coach. A thin, white-faced, black-haired man in a suit with a black top hat in his lap.
How? How did you do that dream? Norton lusts after women. I can feel it.
He wants so badly. There was no way he could say no. He had no protection. He should have been mine.
He has his dignity, sibling. He is, after all,
an emperor.
Don't give me that shit dream. He's no king. He's a crazy man with a cockeyed fantasy. Payne, get your dead ass in here. We're going.
As you wish, Desire.
Desire, you disappoint me. This evening's display, bringing back a dead man to offer Norton the pleasures of the world. It wasn't very subtle.
Go screw yourself, big brother. Drive! Get down and lick Payne. He wants subtle. He'll get subtle. Just watch me. Not here, not with Norton. But I'll make him spill family blood. I'll bring the kindly ones down on his blasted head. One day.
January the 8th, 1880, 8 p.m. The rain is torrential. And even without it, the wind would be cold, gusty, and unpleasant. Norton, a small figure bowed by the effort, is holding up his large red and green parasol made of waxed paper as an umbrella against the wind and rain. He toils up an almost vertical San Francisco street. He looks worn and tired, all of his 62 years and more. A gust of wind snatches the parasol away and down the hill.
Oh, no! No!
Norton is having a stroke. what a physician of his time might have called a sanguineous apoplexy. He has fallen to his knees on the edge of the sidewalk. His mouth is wide open, but no words are coming out. Rolling onto his back into the gutter on the side of the road, his hat has half fallen off. The ostrich feather is limp and wet. He's still alive, just. A little froth dribbles from his mouth. His eyes are wide open, but he couldn't talk, not even if he wanted to. Norton dimly sees somebody approach and stand over him. Despair of the Endless looks down, and she shakes her head.
I hoped that you would come back to me, Joshua. But no, I would seem to have failed. You're a pitiful madman, a Tom of Bedlam, dying in the gutter in the rain. But you never despaired.
Another figure joins her. Tall, thin, white-faced, black-haired, with eyes like stars.
You won.
So it would appear, my sister. Here, I have something for you to remember this little challenge by.
What is it?
A statuette. They sell them in this town. Mementos for travelers from distant parts of the Emperor of this land.
Oh.
Keep it, Despair. Take it back with you to the world behind the mirrors. Keep it as a souvenir.
Should I thank you?
For the lesson? Perhaps. If for nothing else.
What lesson? Wait!
Norton looks up. They have gone. His eyes begin to dim.
Time's up, Your Majesty.
Death has come. Death wearing black tights and a cut-off black swallowtail coat with a mass of spiky black hair. Norton knows it is her, and Norton dies.
How are you feeling?
Well, I don't know. I was to attend a meeting of the Hastings Society this evening when it felt like something struck me in the chest. I feel very strange.
They walk away from the soaked, dirty old body. Norton has no need of it now.
You were Jewish once, weren't you, Joshua? Did you ever hear the story of the 36 Zadokim?
I do not believe so.
They say that the world rests on the backs of 36 living saints. 36 unselfish men and women. Because of them, the world continues to exist.
Oh?
They are the secret kings and queens of this world.
An odd legend, young lady, but I'm afraid I do not see its significance.
No? I've met a lot of kings and emperors and heads of state in my time, Joshua. I've met them all. And you know something? I think I liked you best.
Well, thank you, young lady.
Behind them, in the world of the living, where the rain still falls, a couple of wet people bend over Norton's corpse. One of them raises it to a sitting position.
It's a great hat. Can I try it on?
Oh, I don't see why not.
They walk off into the mist. Norton, arm in arm with Death, who now wears Norton's hat with the ostrich feather. Two cheerful people, arm in arm, heading off, Death alone knows where. Joshua Norton was buried on Sunday, the 10th of January, 1880. 10,000 people filed past the body as it lay in state, and his funeral cortege was over 2 miles long. His burial was marked by a total eclipse of the sun. He was the first and last emperor of the United States of America.
Confess, always wondered what lay beyond life, my dear.
Yeah, everybody wonders. And sooner or later, everybody gets to find out.
The land.
What will we do, Prenado? Why, we will perish.
It's snowing here on the barren plain. There are no buildings of any kind, but in the middle distance there is a mountain range, and at its center, a crag with a double peak. There's a cave in the side of that crag, dark and black.
We will all die, and the land will die, and the world will die, and the cuckoo will reign in bleak dominion over all.
The view is stark and friendless, and yet beautiful in a cold sort of way. Where the snow has melted or been blown by the wind, what lies beneath shows through. There's a dark object about half a mile away, lying in the snow.
Die. That is what we will do.
It must not happen, Luz.
Must not? With the princess gone, what else can we do?
But the Tentoblin is sure to come. He swore to bring us tidings.
The object in the snow is a body. A little man with pointy ears. The Tentoblin. It must have been a violent death. The snow around him is stained with blood. His head and limbs are intact, but his torso has been hacked to bits, his ribcage torn apart and his heart exposed. In his hand, he's still clutching a scroll. There are footprints in the snow around him.
The Tentoblin will not come. I felt him die. The Blackguard found him in the night.
You're making it up, Luz. Imagining things, honest.
No, I felt it inside of my heart. I felt him die.
The voices are coming from the cave in the mountain with the double crag.
But what tidings could the Tentoblin have brought us? Say that she has abandoned us, and the children of the cuckoo continue to spread across the land?
With his colonel knowledge, he once said he would aid our struggle.
He waits on the border. Perhaps he will help us. Perhaps not.
I'm hungry.
We're all hungry, Wilkinson.
I never said we weren't. Did I say we weren't? I don't think anybody here heard me say we weren't. I was just pointing out that I'm bloody starving, that's all. And I'm not just hungry. I'm hungry and I'm cold.
There is no light in the cave. We cannot make out who is speaking.
Actually, I'm hungry and I'm cold and I'm miserable. And we're all gonna die.
For the love of Murphy, Wilkinson, will you stop saying that?
Luz said it first. I was just agreeing with her, and I am hungry.
Martin Tenbones, you have not yet spoken. What say you?
I say that she has not abandoned us, and I have the Porpentine. The hierogram remains unbroken. The land is far from lost.
I think she must be dead, or she's forgotten us.
Inside the cave, four pairs of eyes shine in the darkness. One pair is large, amber, wise.
She cannot have forgotten us, but she may be hurt in her other world. My friends, I have been thinking on this for a long time now.
And?
And it seems to me that if she cannot come to us, one of us must go to her. We must call her back.
How?
I have the Porpentine. It will find her.
But...
I must find her, in whatever distant world she waits. Else the land must be lost to the cold and the dark, and the cuckoo prevail over all.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 12, A Game of You, Slaughter on Fifth Avenue.
If a dream includes the great, shaggy, dog-like creature who is Martin Tenbones, there can be only one dreamer. It's morning, in early September 1991. Barbie's in bed, asleep, in her shabby New York apartment, in the grey area between Chelsea and Greenwich Village. It's just one room and a bathroom, with a kitchen alcove. Over the bed and all over the walls are pictures, blown-up photographs of naked people with tattoos, scars, and piercings. She's asleep in a tangle of curly blonde hair, one arm dangling to the floor, one thin blanket over her. No makeup. Clothes are strewn on the floor. Coffee cups proliferate with mold growing in them. Here and there is a pair of sneakers. There's a small dressing table with a smudged mirror, some pots of paint and makeup on its surface.
Yeah? I'm coming.
Barbie is not expecting visitors. Her night attire is a slightly ripped pair of panties and a faded old t-shirt.
Barbie, it's me, honey. I thought maybe we could go shopping.
Wanda? I was asleep. Come in.
Wanda has long, dark red, shaggy hair, a perfectly made-up face, and wears a shiny black vinyl cut-off top, hot pants, and thigh boots.
I'm sorry. Obviously, I've wrenched you out of a delightful dream. What was it? Writhing on a bearskin with some hunk? Or just one of the dull ones where you're back at school and you forgot your homework?
I don't dream, Wanda.
Oh, come on, Barbie booby. Everybody dreams.
I don't.
Well?
Well, what?
Are we going shopping?
I'm broke.
So's your auntie Wanda. But do you think I'm gonna let a little thing like that stop me?
I look a mess.
You're talking with those cheekbones? I'd kill for those cheekbones. Well, maim, maybe.
You got better cheekbones than me, Wanda. Give me a couple minutes to put my face on. Wake up. You want to make some coffee?
Make coffee? You want me to make you coffee?
Yeah? Is that beneath you or something?
No. It's just my coffee always tastes kind of like something that's been dead for a while. I make a great chocolate souffle, though. Would you like a chocolate souffle?
Coffee.
Okay. You don't know what you're missing.
Now then, what should I do with this face today?
Do you take cream?
Uh-huh.
So, where is it?
In the refrigerator?
First place I looked. There's only this carton of fuzzy green stuff in there. Not even you could drink. You might want to donate it to science or take it to your leader, but...
So go get some. Thessaly will have cream. Or the guys upstairs?
Mm-hmm.
Outside the apartment, the corridor is drab and dirty. The paint is peeling, and there are lines of graffiti on the walls.
Thessaly? It's me, Wanda. You in?
Thessaly wears large, round glasses on her thin face and has long, very straight, light brown hair. She's mousy. Sweet and not unattractive, but definitely mousy. You probably know her, Thessaly. They are very serious and read thick books on art history. This Thessaly, wearing dull, sensible clothes and holding a thick book on art history, doesn't look pleased to see Wanda.
Oh, hi, Wanda.
Yeah. You got any cream?
I've got some soy milk stuff. That okay?
No. No, I don't think so. It's for Barbie. I don't think she'd be satisfied with anything that wasn't squirted from the udder of a real cow.
No. No, sorry.
No problem. See ya, sweet thing. Hi. Hazel? Foxglove? It's me. Come on. Open up. I know you're in there.
We're not here.
You're not here?
Hazel is boyish, with a pudding bowl haircut. Her shirt is buttoned up to the neck. She wears jeans and Doc Martin lace-up boots. She smokes a cigarette. She glares up at Wanda.
We're not here. We went out ages ago.
Don't. The eagle eyes of Sherlock Wanda cannot be fooled. I've already spotted a number of clues. Cigarette ash, parsley in the butter, all that shit. Let me in, or I call out the bloodhounds.
Hazel and Foxglove's apartment isn't much larger than Barbie's, but the ceiling is higher, and a curtained-off bedroom area has been built about halfway up, accessed by stepladder. Underneath is a sitting area and kitchen alcove.
Hmm, candy. May I?
That's why it's in the bowl.
Who is it, Hayes?
It's Wanda.
What does she want?
I don't know.
Well, ask her.
What do you want?
Cream or milk. Just a teeny bit. You got any?
I suppose. What's in it for us?
My undying gratitude. And Barbie's. It's for her coffee?
She wants cream.
Yeah, okay. I'll come down.
Foxglove says it's okay. Don't take too much.
Me? Say, Hazel, how do people actually milk a soybean?
Fox, she wants to know how you milk a soybean.
Three-leg stool and a tin pail. And warm your hands first.
Foxglove, in a black t-shirt and cut-off pants, also smoking a cigarette, has a head of bleached, cropped white hair. She has a cheerful, lazy smile.
Hi, Fox. How many are you up to now?
80, and still counting.
That's good. What do I carry the milk down in?
This.
Hazel, this is a cute frog mug.
Uh-huh.
You expect me to be seen in public carrying a cute frog mug?
Well, if you don't want it.
I didn't say I didn't want it. Thank you, ladies. This act of kindness has touched me more deeply than you can ever know.
You're so full of it, Wanda.
As Wanda carries the milk back downstairs, she meets the top floor neighbor, George, coming up. George has a mop of short fair hair and round owlish glasses. He wears a white shirt with the sleeves rolled up and pens in the breast pocket.
Hi, George. How's it hanging?
George is blushing and recoiling from Wanda as if she is tainted in some way. As they pass on the narrow stairs, he's staring straight ahead of him, doing his best to pretend she's not there.
Why, I'm just dandy. Thank you so much for asking. This? Oh, don't worry. It's not my cute frog mug. I'm carrying it for a friend.
Barbie's changed into a white t-shirt and blue jeans and is back at the mirror,
there,
finishing off her makeup.
Our coffee, madam.
Thank you.
She's drawn a black and white checkerboard across one half of her face.
And what are we today, then?
I'm a chessboard. You're just tacky, Wanda. Okay, I'm ready. Where are we going?
Tiffany's.
Tiffany's? You're crazy.
We're broke, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where we go. We can't afford it.
Right.
So, we're going to Tiffany's.
Okay. Ugh. Yucky coffee.
I warned you.
Cute mug, though.
Princess Barbara, the subway awaits you. Shake your little buns.
The Dreaming.
So, what are we waiting for? Exactly. I mean, if that's not a dumb question.
No, it is not a foolish question. However, I am not sure that I know the answer.
Morpheus of the Endless, Lord of Dreams, stands in a wasteland by a small pool. A dead tree is nearby, a leafless stump with dead claw-like twigs. Perched on it is Matthew the Raven. Dream is gazing into the pool at his reflection.
Past and future both cast their ripples into the dreaming, Matthew. Something is happening. That is why I have come to this place. Just wait.
What the hell was that?
That was a beginning, Matthew. Something just traveled from one state of existence to another. It came from one of the more distant skerries of dream. Let us observe the consequences.
Dream takes the pouch from his belt and reaches in to take out a handful of dust. He pours it into the pool. Matthew flutters down to the water's edge to see more closely.
I've seen the pool bubble before, but these weird shapes coming out of it.
Interesting. Great winds are coming, Matthew. And darkness. And pain. Do you see? One of the Skerries is dying. I fear only grief can be the outcome.
What are you going to do about it, boss?
Do about it? The Skerries are distant islets of the Shoals of Dream. They live, they die, they come and go. Why should I do anything about it?
This is Lexington Avenue Uptown Local 6 train. The next stop is 23rd Street.
Don't you just love the subway? I just have to set foot on a subway train, and it's like a magic carpet, you know? It could take you anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Oh, look at the cute puppy.
With the cute couple.
Pet or fashion statement? Who knows?
Got any spare change?
Uh-oh.
Barbie and Wanda stand by the door. An elderly woman is working her way up the carriage towards them, holding a battered tin cup.
Excuse me.
Her name is Maisie Hill. She is wearing a torn old cardigan over a faded summer dress, a headscarf, and big boots.
You got any spare change?
I gave it the office already. Bug off and die.
Here.
Yeah. Thanks.
Take it away. Ah, I don't like dogs.
What is wrong with her?
I don't like dogs. I'm scared of dogs.
Hey, don't worry about Rowley. He won't hurt you. He's just a little puppy, aren't you, Rowley?
I don't like dogs. I don't like dogs. I'm scared of dogs. I don't like them.
Jeez, she's certifiable.
I feel sorry for her.
Listen, lady, he's a puppy. He's on a leash, so lay off, will ya?
I'm scared of dogs. I don't like dogs.
23rd Street, stand clear of the opening doors, please.
I just don't like dogs.
Another of the wonderful sights of our fair city.
Don't.
I like them.
You gotta develop a thicker hide if you're gonna be a real New Yorker, Barbie Bubula.
I don't like dogs.
This is a city of crazies. The art lies in not letting them get to you.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
I mean, Jesus, baby. If I let it get to me, I'd never go outside the door.
This is the Twilight Zone. I'm in it, you're in it, but I don't like dogs, ladies in it. Shit happens. This is New York. We control the vertical. Or what's at the outer limits?
Shut up, Wanda. It's not funny. Poor thing. She was really scared.
Scare me. I'm frightened of them.
Maisie Hill climbs up the subway stairs into the open air, into a gray New York morning.
I don't like dogs.
The few passers-by are ignoring her, looking at something in the street.
I don't like dogs.
Her gaze is fixed on the sidewalk, her eyes wide, her face pale.
I don't like dogs.
Maisie Hill sleeps in doorways. She may not survive another winter.
Oh, God!
Martin Tenbones has materialized in the middle of the street. He's a huge, dog-like creature, about 8 feet high at the shoulders, his muscular frame covered in shaggy golden fur. He looks friendly, nice, a wonderful big shaggy dog with pointed ears who has escaped from the world of dreams to make Maisie's worst nightmare real.
Big dog!
She's in utter shock, standing, legs apart on the sidewalk, her hands by her sides. Maisie drops the tin cup. A stream of urine runs down her legs, pooling on the ground.
No!
Breakfast at Tiffany's then?
Not yet. Breakfast first. window shopping later, okay? I want a real cup of coffee, one I can drink.
You don't remember your dreams, then?
I don't dream.
Uh-uh. Everybody dreams. I read about it. You don't dream, you go, cuckoo. No, you just don't remember them, is all.
I remember my dreams.
I thought you said you didn't...
I used to dream. I used to dream about lots of things.
Okay.
I'd have this weird dream, night after night. Same dream. Well, not the same dream. It continued, you know, like a book or a TV show. Same time, same channel. I just had to close my eyes.
So what happened?
I don't know. I mean, it's all sort of mixed together. That was when I split with Ken. I went through a load of bad stuff back then, and I don't know. Somewhere in all that, the dreams went away.
I dream. I have terrific dreams. Never about sex, though. Not since I was 12 and having my first wet dreams. Now, they were really Mondo weird. Here comes your breakfast.
Scrambled eggs, hun?
Thank you.
I love your checkerboard face paint.
Thanks.
I once dreamed I was making out with Weirdo Lila Lake. You remember the Weirdos?
Wanda, what are you talking about?
The Weirdos, from the old Hyperman comics. They lived on this square planet somewhere out in outer space, and they did everything backwards.
Us do opposite of Earth things in Weirdo world.
They had these white faces, like they were made from crystal or something. And, like, they were all Hyperman or his friends. And all the women were Lila Lake. They had this Weirdo code and... Are you okay?
No, I don't think so. I'm feeling kind of woozy.
So eat, drink, come on. You gotta take care of yourself.
I'm okay, I'll be fine.
So are you telling me that you haven't dreamed in what, 2 years?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I still remember my old dreams. There was this big dog thing who was my best friend called Mr. Boney or something like that. And the whole land was in terrible danger.
The land?
The place I used to dream about. And then my life kind of fell apart. It wasn't Ken's fault, though. Not really. There was this one weird night. And after that, I wouldn't talk to him. I wouldn't, you know, S-E-X, anything.
Mm-hmm. How much are they robbing people here? I've got this.
He just went off and found Cindy. I mean, we were still living together, but he was bringing her home. It got really shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Hal, he was my landlord in Florida. He's an old friend of Scarlett's. They were in some shows together years back. So he got in touch with Scarlett, and she got me the room up here.
I wanted to be a Weirdo when I grew up. Weirdo Alvin.
Alvin? That's your real name?
Wanda's my real name, Barbie baby. Alvin's just the name I was born with.
You ever tell anyone, Barbs, you're dead meat?
It dies with me, huh?
Wanda and Barbie walk down Fifth Avenue in the autumn sunshine. Martin Tenbones' steady progress up Fifth Avenue, marked by a head-down, come-hell-or-high-water determination, has been impeded by a rapidly thrown-up police cordon. Attempts to stop him have so far failed, but his great muzzle drips blood, and one eye is already bloodshot and swollen.
Hodge, Cortez, get ahead of this thing. Morris, where's my backup?
On their way, Sarge.
Tell them to move it.
This is a bright place, filled with frightened people and fast, hard things that hurt and wound. No matter. I swore I would remain by her side forever and until death divided us. I must walk until once more we are reunited. This place is frightening, but I am not afraid.
What the hell?
People shout. Oh. Blood seeps from the wound in my flank. High stone cliffs tower upon each side of me. I am brave. I am not afraid. That the land may not die. I must walk this distant land and be not afraid.
Sarge?
Death hovers near me, screeching and fluttering and giggling. A ghost death in a ghost world. I tell myself I feel only ghost pain, and I will not let it hurt me. I am not afraid. All Princess Barbara, protect me now as I have protected you in days long past. Oh, Murphy, watch over me. I will not be afraid.
I was in Louch Read comics when I was a girl. Pop said they were unladylike. He used to say that lots of things were unladylike. I was his little lady. I wonder what he'd say if he could see me now. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I don't recognize me.
I think my parents tell their friends I'm dead. My Aunt Dora, who still talks to me, I mean, she prays for me to repent my wicked ways, but she talks to me at least. She says they've still got my old room at home on the farm, just like it was when I left. All my old toys and everything laid out on the bed, just like it's a shrine or something.
Toys? Wanda, what's happening here?
Sorry, folks. Fifth Avenue's closed. There's nothing to see. You better find an alternate route. I repeat, there's nothing to see. Move on. Come on now.
What?
What is that thing?
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Hey, I was here first. Find your own spot.
Excuse me. Martin? Martin Tenbones?
Princess? Princess!
Tactical, you got a green shot?
Early, Captain.
Martin Tenbones! Over here!
Princess!
He's on the move!
Good, Chief. He's about to be just where we want him.
Martin Tenbones weaves through police vehicles towards where Barbie stands on the sidewalk, his golden mane streaming back as he runs towards his princess, a trail of blood behind him. Barbie's checkerboard makeup is smudged with tears.
Martin Tenbones?
My princess?
We've all got a clean shot.
Not Martin Tenbones.
My princess, I came for you.
But you're from my dream.
Princess, the land needs you. Please come back to us. Fulfill your quest. Around my neck, a porpentine. Take it. Please, princess, take it. The cuckoo. It will destroy us all.
The porpentine. But, okay. It's hard to find in all your fur. I've got it.
I love you, princess. And I am sorry. I said I would not leave your side. Not while I live. Not ever.
Out of the way, bimbo. Come on, move up.
Barbie, are you okay? What's that you got? What happened? Barbie, you're crying.
The land. It is evening. In the dark cave in the double-cragged peak, a small fire has been kindled. Around it, Martin Tenbones' three companions are now visible in the flickering firelight. Wilkinson is a large rat with a long, long snout. He wears a trench coat and fedora hat, with a card stuck in the hatband saying, "Press." Prenado is a monkey wearing a red organ grinder's jacket with gold trimmings on and a red pillbox hat. Luz is a dodo, like the old drawings of the extinct bird from centuries ago, with green plumage. The three sit around a fire, a little way in from the cave mouth.
Did you feel that?
Feel what? I didn't feel anything. Did you feel anything, Prenado?
No. What do you feel, Luz?
Martin Tenbolt's. I felt him so far away, far beyond the edge of the world. I felt his pain. I felt him die.
You sure you weren't imagining it? I mean, what with being all worried and everything.
I know what I felt, Wilkinson. He is dead.
Do you know if he found the princess first?
If he had found the princess, do you think he would have died?
Here, you know something. Here, I'll tell you something that'll make you laugh. You ready? Right then. If he is dead, and if she's not on her way, well then we're going to think he was the lucky one. Dying early, getting it over with. You're going to laugh, aren't you?
Wilkinson.
Yes, Luz?
For Murphy's sake, be quiet. Please.
Come on. We're nearly home. Just one more step. That's it. And one more. Come on, Barbie. Keep walking for Auntie Wanda. Come on. One more step. There we go. Now, just a few more tiny steps and you're snug in your own little den again. Come on, Barbie. Everything's okay. Listen, if you want, I can stay. Or I can call someone. And it was only a dog or something. It didn't even hurt you, Barb. I mean, they shot it before it could do any damage.
I think I want to be on my own now. Please.
That's fine then. No problem. I'll just be next door. Bang on the wall if you want me. You know the routine. Well, you, get some rest.
Phew.
Wanda has managed to get the shell-shocked Barbie home, but she has no idea what any of this means.
Excuse me?
It is George, the occupant of the top-floor apartment, with blonde, almost crew-cut hair and the thick glasses. He looks twitchy.
The lady in apartment one? She is not very well?
Butt out, George. It's none of your business. She's just had a hard day.
Barbie's face is a mess. There's no checkerboard anymore. Not after the crying and the sweating and the rubbing. She raises her fist. A silver chain hangs from it. She opens the fist, and inside is the Porpentine. A bright gem of pink rose quartz crystal surrounded by loops of spun thin silver. It's elegant, 2 inches in diameter, and it glitters and shines.
The Porpentine? But that was only my dream. It's all coming back. Martin Tenbones. And the Porpentine. And the land. And the scary thing. The cuckoo.
And as she speaks the cuckoo's name, the little room is full of dark flying birds flitting across the room from floor to ceiling, almost blotting out the light.
No!
And they are gone, as quickly as they appeared. Barbie is on her feet, alone in the room. The Porpentine in her hand is shining, glittering in the darkness. Barbie hugs herself.
Please, no. It isn't real. It was only a dream. What's happening to me?
Having made his way back to the top floor, George sits on the landing outside his room. One of the black cuckoos flies up from the stairwell and towards him. He reaches his arm out. It lands.
Come with me, little birdie.
George enters his apartment, cradling the bird in his hands as if it is something precious. He holds the bird up in front of him, then opens his mouth wide. George tries to cram the bird whole into his mouth. It is much bigger than he could ever actually open his jaw to accommodate, but he keeps pushing. And soon, somehow, there are just a few tail feathers protruding from his lips. George wipes his lips and turns to look at a poster-sized picture pinned to his wall. It is of Barbie, walking down the street, not aware her photo is being taken. George, smiling a small, tight smile behind his blank glasses, moves closer to the photograph, and he speaks to it.
You don't know us, Princess Barbara, but the children of the cuckoo know you. Oh, yes, we know all about you.
Barbie's apartment, New York City, evening. Standing by the dressing table near her bed, wearing a bathrobe over her t-shirt, Barbie holds the porpentine in her cupped hands, a lump of pink rose quartz with spidery threads of spun silver surrounding it. She stares out at nothing. She is miles away.
Oh!
Hastily, she puts the porpentine into a small drawer at the side of the dressing table.
Hold on!
Hi, Barbie, it's me. Is it all right if I mean, can I come in and talk to you?
Sure, Hazel, come in.
I hope it's not too late or anything. I mean, if you're trying to get some sleep, I can go away again.
No, I wasn't trying to sleep. You want anything?
Just a talk.
Uh-huh.
I figured there's stuff you'd know that no one else here would. I mean, I'm not sure I can talk to Fox Club about it, and Wanda doesn't know from shit about that stuff. And Thessaly, I mean, she's so vanilla. And Scarlet's out of town, so that left you.
Come and sit.
Thanks.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about? Hazel? What's the matter?
What do you do if you think you're pregnant?
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 13, A Game of You, Lullabies of Broadway.
Look, it's a very simple question. If you don't know the answer, just tell me you don't know and I'll go away again.
Hazel, you're gay.
Oh, great. Tell me something I don't know.
And you really think you might be pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me about it?
Well, about 6 weeks back, I wound up working really late, and one of the waiters gave me a lift home, and we were, like, both a bit drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fox had gone back to visit her folks, and he was sort of tired, and he asked if he could stay over. So I said, sure.
You said...
Well, he was tired. So what else was I going to do? And he promised nothing was going to happen. And then we were lying together, and his thing went all hard, and we sort of did it. Well, I figured there was no way I could get pregnant.
You mean he used a condom?
No, but we did it standing up.
Standing up?
Yeah. So it should have been fine. And it was all over really fast. I mean, it was kind of dumb, but he seemed so sad and sort of lonely. And anyway, he's gay, mostly. Well, my periods are usually pretty clockwork. I mean, me and Fox always come on within a day of each other, but this time it just didn't come.
Hazel, this waiter...
Raphael.
Right, Raphael. I mean, what did you think when he asked to stay over?
I thought he was real tired.
Did you enjoy it?
Not much. It hurt a bit.
I'll get you an ashtray. A saucer, anyway.
I can't be pregnant, can I?
Hazel, look. Was this your first time with a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there are kits you can buy to check if you're pregnant. Here.
Thanks. I don't have to kill a rabbit, do I?
What?
I thought someone said at school that the test was like, if this rabbit died or not, and I won't kill a rabbit. I'm a vegetarian.
I think that was in the olden days.
Have you ever been pregnant?
Once.
What happened?
I had an abortion. I was still at high school.
Does it hurt?
Not really. You get an anesthetic.
So, what do I do?
You get a home pregnancy test. You go see your doctor. Then you talk to Foxglove and figure out what you're going to do next. And listen, Hazel, when it comes to sex, well, don't ever believe anything a guy says. Guys think with their dicks.
Oh. I mean, I'd heard people say that, other women, lesbians, but I figured that was because they didn't like men. But you like men.
I suppose. I haven't slept with one for 2 years. Yeah, I like men. But I still wouldn't let one stay the night unless I was planning to sleep with him.
Can I have the frog mug? That was why I told Foxglove I was coming down here, to get our mug back.
Sure.
Thanks. I mean, for everything, for listening, for the advice.
No problem. Here you go. One frog.
Thanks.
Let me know how it goes, okay?
I will. Sorry. Listen, you look like you need some sleep.
Maybe I do. Good night. Silly girl. She's right. I am tired, but I'm scared. I don't even know what I'm scared of. Something in a dream I dreamed too long ago. I don't want to sleep. TV. I'll watch a little TV. Then maybe I'll go for a walk. Walk down to the waterfront and stare at Lady Liberty while the sun comes up. And get mugged and raped by a New York crazy before I get 5 blocks? Maybe not a great idea.
...of the New York Police Department maintains the giant dog shot dead on Fifth Avenue this morning must have escaped from a private collection.
Oh, God. Martin Ten Bones. Poor Martin Ten Bones.
Old-fashioned cotton wool, when you could be using new Wonder Wool. Now in cinnamon, fresh mint, and new salsa flavors.
Hurricane Lisa should blow itself out harmlessly over the North Atlantic. There's another front coming in.
Bobby's eyelids begin to droop.
She's such a beautiful baby, Bobby. We think we'll name her after you.
As she loses her grip on reality, she finds a miniature Hazel and Foxglove cheerfully sitting on top of the TV set, holding a rag doll.
And she'll be available in cinnamon, fresh mint, or new salsa flavor. Cecily's vanilla.
Then they are gone. Instead, there is now a skinny, pointy-eared, raggedy elf woman.
Hello, Barbie. My name's Nuala. I'm rather new at this. In fact, probably shouldn't be here at all. You have to be careful. They won't tell me very much. But there's something bad on the way.
Oh, nodding off. Damn it. Mustn't fall asleep. Watch this stupid TV.
Our next guest is someone wanted to see on the show, humanitarian, wit, gourmet, and international traveler. Please